there's moonbeams in your elbows, and there's rivers in your head. And I wanna see you forever, babe, forever. Don't take me back in time now, but there's nothing for me there.
Welcome to On the Wing podcast presented by Purina Pro Plan. I'm joined today by Jeremy Collard from the Ruffed Grouse Society to provide a preview for the 2025 ruffed grouse and woodcock hunting seasons, while also offering a few tips for adding a tail fan or one of those long beak timber doodles that I love so much to your game vest this season. Also, would like to take this opportunity to point our On the Wing podcast listeners to episode 2 of our opening day series. It's a video that I did last season for the Michigan Rough Grouse opener in my home stomping grounds of the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. It was a grouse hunt I did with my mom, my dad, my brother, my wife, and my pack of German short-haired pointers. You can check out the film at pheasantsforever.org/openingday2025. And special thanks to Chief Upland and Tetra Hearing for being sponsors of this year's opening day film. In fact, Tetra Hearing, in celebration of all the upcoming opening days, is offering $100 off any custom shield devices. You can go to tetrahearing.com and use the code PFOPENINGDAY100 at checkout for a limited time. In addition to saving on the industry's most advanced hearing technology designed specifically for upland hunters, Tetra will also double their conservation gift-in-kind donation for each set of custom shield devices sold during this opening day celebration. And Chief Upland has a giveaway going on in conjunction with opening day as well. The Pheasants Forever Edition over-under vest, one will be given to a lucky winner. To qualify, like Chief Upland's social channels, then in the comments section for whatever channel you're following the opening day post on, tag the person you're most excited about hunting with on an opening day coming up in this season. So two steps. Like Chief Upland on Facebook, Instagram, and then on the podcast post on Facebook or Instagram for this episode, tag the person you're most excited about hunting with this season. All right, Jerry, thanks for being patient there. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do for Rough Grouse Society.
Yeah, so my name is Jeremy. I'm the Regional Engagement Coordinator for Minnesota, Iowa, Washington State. We have a newly formed chapter in Colorado, which we are very excited to announce. And these guys are out there building a chapter, building a community of grouse hunters and looking at what we can do on the habitat front. So we're very excited to be expanding out west.
So say those states again, right? You have Minnesota.
Minnesota.
You have Iowa.
I have Iowa.
Did you say Wisconsin?
Not Wisconsin.
You have Minnesota, Iowa, and you jumped. The W was Washington.
Washington
State. And then you added Colorado in there.
And now we've got Colorado.
You know those states aren't all connected, right?
They are. So it's a little bit of windshield time driving around Minnesota and down to our folks in Iowa and occasionally getting out west and enjoying those folks too. So I enjoy it. It's a great job. Just love being with our chapter volunteers and our committees and just strategizing on how we can build a rough grouse and grouse-centered community. Cool. Joining hunters and conservationists together to get out and do what we love and continue to make sure that we've got the habitat and the needs for our birds to keep on doing what we do.
Did I detect a dialect that isn't necessarily Minnesotan?
Do you pick up on that?
What's your backstory?
I can't go anywhere in Minnesota without someone commenting on the accent. I've been here for about 2.5 years now. I grew up in Florida. I spent the last 15 years or so before I moved up here on the Florida-Georgia line in Jacksonville. So people pretty quickly pick up that I've got a little bit of a southern twang to it.
Uh-huh.
I don't necessarily hear it, but
everyone else is strong, but it's also not Minnesotan.
I'm working on my oaks and my ooftas.
Yes.
when I say it with a little bit of a southern twang, I get quite a laugh most days. But
do you grow up as a quail hunter?
I didn't. I didn't grow up as a hunter.
No.
Or not. Yeah, I was one of those, what they call adult onset hunters. So I always had an appetite and wanted to learn how to hunt and get out in the field, even as a young boy. One of my parents' favorite stories that they like to tell everyone, when I was younger, we were driving out to a rural part of Florida to go visit some family friends. I was maybe 8 or 10 years old, and I looked out the window and was looking at the forest. And I said, when I get older, I'm going to get me a hot shotgun and hunt me some beef. And they just laughed. Being a younger fella, everything was beef. But they tell that story and think it's pretty funny. But my dad wasn't much of an outdoorsman growing up. My parents were both from Minnesota, so that's my Minnesota connection.
Oh, wow.
But they moved to Florida about 10 years or so before I was born, and that's where I grew up. My uncles and grandparents and all my extended family up here in Minnesota, I got a pretty strong outdoor and hunting-centric background with them. But my dad wasn't much of an outdoorsman, so I didn't really pick it up until after college when I was 20, 21 years old. So.
Okay.
Yep. So.
Cool. And you said you lived in northern Minnesota for a little while?
I did. So my mom's side of the family was originally from Ely after my great-great-great-grandfather moved from Finland.
Oh, wow.
As I share a common ancestry with a lot of folks around here, but moved from Finland to Ely back in the late 1890s. He lived in Ely for about 6 years working in the mines. As many did, saving up money to send back to Finland before the rest of the family came over. Homesteaded on about 150 acres just off of White Iron Lake up there in Ely.
Right on.
We still have a little small parcel left in the family up there with one of the original homestead cabins up there that he built for my great uncle back in the day. So you still got a little dovetail log cabin up there that was built in 1902. And still in good shape, and I've been visiting that cabin my whole life. So
wow.
I love it. Yep.
So we're going to get into kind of previewing and forecasting the rough grouse season, and we're also going to, you know, offer some tips and tricks. I'm curious with talk of Ely. Ely is near and dear to my heart. It's on the doorstep to the Boundary Waters. It's one of the most beautiful places in the world. Have you done a fair amount of grouse hunting out of Ely into the Boundary Waters?
I have. Actually, going back to being an adult onset hunter when I was in college, and then for a couple years or a year or so after college, I spent some summers working at a Boundary Waters canoe outfitter.
Oh, wow.
So I got to know some of the guys up there. And always having an appetite and wanting to learn how to hunt, coincidentally, the first thing that I ever hunted was rough grouse.
Sweet.
I had some buddies at the outfitter that I stayed late until the fall one year, and they took me out and slapped an orange hat on my head and got me suited up and went out. And the first thing I ever hunted was actually coincidentally rough grouse. So we've come full circle.
Yeah, that's fabulous.
After college and all that, I moved back down to Florida and just really wanted to stay in the hunting atmosphere and learn it. Became a big turkey hunter.
Uh-huh.
It became one of my big passions and volunteered with the local chapter in Jacksonville.
Local chapter of National Wild Turkey
Federation. National Wild Turkey Federation. Yeah, just outside out of college and just got really heavily involved with those guys. And one thing led to another. A role opened up with the Turkey Federation. And that chapter, some of the folks in there encouraged me to apply. They thought I'd be a great fit for it. And next thing I knew, I was in the conservation world working for the Turkey Federation as a regional director down there for about 5 years before coming up here. So I was a big turkey hunter, chasing birds around down there, and did a little deer hunting as well. But every fall, growing up as a kid, we always came up to Minnesota in the summertime to visit our cabins and,
mm-hmm.
and hang out and get out in the Boundary Waters and whatnot. But as I got a little older, my focus shifted and my annual trips to the North Country into our cabins. We're always in the fall. I wanted to chase those beloved birds around a little bit more.
You mentioned your first ever hunt was for rough grouse. And I think about
in the boundary waters.
In the boundary waters. Jeez. Which for folks that have never been up there, it's not like the boundary water. I mean, it's a wilderness area, so it's not logged. Trying to cut your way through the boundary waters is extraordinarily difficult. Most of the hunting in the boundary waters is done from portage to portage to portage. That's where trails exist to carry canoes from lake to lake. Like trying to bushwhack in the boundary waters, my experience has been it's darn near impossible. Right?
It can be tough. It's thick up there, thick and rugged, but I think that's somewhat of the appeal.
Oh, no doubt about it. It's an accomplishment. I mean, honestly, shooting a rough grouse, period, is an accomplishment, particularly when the leaves are on. That first hunt, did you get, I mean, for most people, they don't get their first rough grouse on their first hunt or even the first few hunts. It is a, you know, I don't want to say trophy, but it's a super challenging experience to begin with and stick with. How long did you get one on your first hunt?
We did. I did end up harvesting one bird on that hunt. We didn't have a whole lot of success that trip. It was a boundary water trip, so we were, like you said, portaging from lake to lake.
Mm.
We did a pretty significant loop in the mornings and the evenings. We got out and did a little bit of hunting. Those guys had more success than I did, of course, but we did.
But you got one. That's successful, man. Seriously. First ever hunt in the boundary waters, and you got one.
I did.
Was it on the wing?
It was on the wing.
Yes, no kidding.
Yeah, flew right across the
trail. Did you guys have dogs with you?
We did not.
Okay.
We were on foot.
Okay.
It was four of us in canoes, and we were all loaded up with all of our gear.
Were you fishing, too?
We did.
The cast and blast boundary, it was in September? October?
Early October.
So lake trout would have been closed by that time, so you're probably fishing walleye?
Fishing walleye.
Yeah,
we were. It was pretty cold that year, too. I remember that was one of my first ever camping experiences where snow was coming down while we were out there.
Oh,
that was special to me, being a southern fella from Florida. Like, wow, I'm camping in the snow. I'm doing the real deal.
So yeah. And you're hunting from lake to lake before the lakes freeze.
That's right.
Which adds a whole nother level of adventure to it.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah, great time with those guys. So shout out to Cliff Wald's Outfitter in Ely, Minnesota. Those are the guys that I used to run with. And
just, what was it, Cliff?
Cliff Wald's
Outfitter. Cliff Wald, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So Ryan and the crew up there, great group of guys. I really enjoyed it. People asked me what my favorite job was, and I love working for the Rough Grouse Society. I loved working for NWTF, but man, that was one of my favorite jobs I ever had. Yeah. It was great. So.
Hard to ever beat a wilderness experience where you're taking people out fishing and hunting and paddling into one of the most beautiful areas in the world.
I agree. Definitely. Yeah.
Congratulations also to you. You're days away from your wedding, and you made time to join me for this podcast. So congratulations on being married.
Thank you. Yes. So I'm sure my lovely bride, Alicia, will be listening to this at some point here in the coming days. So we are very happy. Got married on Saturday. It was a great experience. Had family and friends coming to the wedding from all over the country. Had folks there from Washington State and Colorado, Florida. And it was great.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
And skipped the honeymoon to do this podcast with me.
Don't bring that up, Bob. Don't bring that up. We took a mini honeymoon for a few days right after the wedding. We're going to take a longer honeymoon in the spring. But I'm here with you today.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Excited to be here.
Alicia?
Alicia.
Yeah, thank you, Alicia.
Yeah, thank you, Alicia.
All right, so we're going to talk about last year's hunting season as we preview the one that's about ready to start as we record, you know, just hours away from the start of Rough Grouse Opener in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and a couple days before Michigan. Before we get going into the meat of the conversation, I'm proud to recognize Purina Pro Plan As the national dog food sponsor of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever's Wildlife Habitat Mission, and the presenting sponsor of On the Wing podcast, my pups all eat Purina Pro Plan, not just because it's Purina supports the wildlife habitat conservation mission of our organization, which is important to me and should be important to you, but Purina is also designed, Purina Pro Plan is designed for the working dog like yours and like mine. Learn more at ProPlanSport.com. All right, let's start with a recap of the 2024 rough grouse hunting season. Particularly, you know, we're focused on kind of the Great Lakes area. As I think back, I'm like most people keyed in on roadside reports, drumming counts. And last year, the drumming counts in this neck of the world were like 50-year highs. How was your season of 2024?
I had a really good season, actually. I'd been from the Ely area or having cabins up there. That's where I did most of my hunting and surprisingly well. So going back to my new bride, I was able to take her out last fall, and she got her first grouse, and she was super excited about it. But I know people were reporting mixed success, especially up in the northeast section of Minnesota last year, due to some pretty heavy spring rain and cooler weather last year. But overall, my season was pretty good. I've got no complaints.
Hey, give us, Ted, an overgeneralization of rough grouse season across the country last year. Was it pretty good everywhere? Was like everything where you find habitat and favorable weather, it's a bit mixed?
Yeah, I would say anecdotally, just based on what I've been hearing from our guys in the Western Great Lakes, it was a mixed success. I think coming off the year prior, having been a very outstanding year, everyone having a great time, trying to compare apples to apples from one year to the next, like, well, it wasn't as good as last year, but I think the spring definitely had quite a bit to do with people's success rates out in the woods. According to the numbers, however, I mean, we still were above 10-year averages from what I understand. And it was
pretty good.
Pretty good.
Yeah, that match, I'd say pretty good to very good last year. It matches my experience. You know, like you said, and this is true of the pheasant range last year, it's so important what happens in the month of June. Month of June, particularly in the North Woods, was super wet last in this June of 2024. And rough grouse, much like pheasants and quail, they're hatching. Well, quail hatch over a longer period of time, but pheasants and rough grouse tend to hatch that mid-June timeframe. And if it's wet, if it's cold, if there's hail, that can have a pretty big impact on the success of a nesting season, can it?
Definitely. That's definitely for sure. We have our national hunt up in the Grand Rapids area, and we do some studies and just look and see what people are bringing in on the back end of that hunt. And most of the birds that were harvested during that time were adults. So we're definitely coinciding with the reports we're hearing from all over the place, is not a lot of younger birds. The brood success last spring was probably definitely heavily affected by the early season butter. So.
Which matches a lot of adult birds, matches what drumming counts really measures. So one of the things that, for our listeners that I want to make sure is understood, if they're in tune with pheasant hunting and quail hunting forecasts, they really are in tune with August roadside counts. And August roadside counts measure the brood numbers. Like, so young of the year are measured in August roadside counts. When it comes to rough grouse counting, the same measurement of August broodside just doesn't happen because these are birds that live in the woods. They're not coming out to roadsides. So the measurement that's typically used as an index for rough grouse is drumming counts, which are done in the springtime. And it's measuring the adult carryover from winter into spring of adult birds, males in particular. So it's two different things that are being measured. So just as a distinction there for our listeners in terms of what drumming counts mean versus August roadside counts, as you look to the season ahead, 2025, which is, on the west, some places already open, and in the Great Lakes starting to open up. What do you forecast for the year ahead for rough grouse hunting?
Yeah, so what I've been hearing from folks around the Western Great Lakes is we did get a little bit of spring rains and some cooler weather in June, but it happened a little bit later than it did the year prior.
Ooh.
So in terms of brood success and nesting success rates, there is some optimism on the juvenile accounts being a little more increased than they were the previous year, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah,
for us. So I think this year coming up should be pretty good. In terms of the 10-year cycle, I think we're near the top of the peak of that. So I think we're looking good.
So the 10-year cycle, so here we are in 2025, that you're expecting that to peak out in the next couple of years?
I think anecdotally, I think some people probably put that peak around 2023. So,
okay.
Yeah, but that's just what I've
heard. We're still close.
Still close, yeah. So
okay.
We should be near the top of that. So looking good.
What about anecdotally? You know, when you're traveling up north to visit chapters, are you seeing birds out and about?
I have, yeah. And I've been hearing reports of, you know, we've got a mentored hunt coming up. It's our first annual Minnesota Grouse Camp coming up in October. And I've been talking to some of the guys up there and hearing reports, even from the caterer that's going to be serving us and whatnot. But yeah, they've been seeing birds on the side of the road and getting out and checking things out. So I think the counts are up and we're really optimistic for this season coming up.
Nice. Nice. Do you have a dog at home?
I do.
What do you have?
I've got a black lab German short hair pointer mix.
Oh, wow. Okay.
My best buddy Scout, he's 6 years old this year. So he's a versatile dog, gets out in the duck blind with me, gets out in the grouse woods. We've done a little quail hunting together. Good dog. Yeah. Very, very tall, lengthy fellas.
So a lab short hair mix, is it more of a pointer or more of a flusher?
He's more of a flusher.
Okay.
So yeah, he's a flusher. He will point. He's got a lot of potential that I wish I had the experience and the time to pull out of him. So I think he would be a fantastic hunting dog. He is a fantastic hunting dog, but even better if I had a little more time to work with him. But he's a good boy.
So. Right on. Well, next up, we're going to talk about some tips for the season ahead. Before that, I want to recognize Green Belt Premium for bringing us premium moments in the field. The Pheasant Friendly Beer, Green Belt Premium and Premium Light. The Pheasants Forever Camo Cases are on liquor store shelves right now in Minnesota, in Wisconsin, Iowa, Nebraska, North Dakota, and South Dakota. Good land. Good beer. And today's premium moment comes from Minnesota on Instagram. Colby Juden writes in, I got home from work with an hour and a half left of shooting light. I quickly grabbed my 2-year-old black lab and headed to our local public land. At first, it was very discouraging as we ran into a coyote and another hunter within the first 200 yards. So we had to circle back around and walk a different part of the parcel of public land we weren't intending to hunt. But Tank, my lab, started going crazy on a patch of bent over cattails. A beautiful rooster flushed out about 10 yards in front. I made a good shot and Tank made a very nice, easy retrieve in the golden hour for this short hunt. So thanks to Greenbelt Premium and thanks to Colby writing in this premium moment on Instagram. We've got a Greenbelt Premium prize pack on its way to Colby. Greenbelt Premium is the pheasant friendly beer. All right. Right now, if we look outside, there's just a tint of color in the leaves in central Minnesota. As you go further north, Ely, the Gunflint area, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, there's a little more color, but not much. It's a jungle out there.
It is.
Do you have any tips for folks to find birds, find rough grouse on the opener when you can't hardly see in front of your... In front of you, 100 yards.
Yeah, definitely. So we were down after our wedding. We went down to the southern eastern part of the state, just a little south of Winona. We were seeing just little hints of red and yellow in the trees even down there. So I think according to the Farmer's Almanac, it might be an earlier fall and colder winter. We'll see how that plays out. Hmm. Early part of the year, I would say get down into some of the lower lowland areas down along the swamp edges. You definitely want to find edge cover as always. Hmm. But yeah, I would say even just little small changes in temperature when you get down into some of the cooler draws, yes, probably you're going to find some birds still grouped up in the early part of the season. So
totally agree with that. You can, in many places, you're walking through woods, and when you go down into like an alder swamp or a cedar swamp or something, you can feel it on your skin, those little microclimates.
Right.
And the grouse can feel it too, especially if, you know, here we are mid-September, temperatures are warm generally, and they're warm and humid, hopefully not buggy, but often buggy.
Often buggy.
But in September, it's often warm and humid, and if you can slip down, like you said, to the edge of a creek or a creek, depending on where you're from.
Creek.
edge of an alder slough, you find a little bit of microclimate, and birds will be there. The other thing I think about early season is if you find like grassy patches along a logging road, I've found like rough grouse to be really focused on grasshoppers for early, like September food. And then they start to change to, you know, clover as the season goes on. But right now, they're putting the feed bag on grasshoppers. Do you find that too this time of year?
Yeah, I think so. Grasshoppers, their food's definitely going to change as the changes in the season start to occur. But yeah, I would agree with that generally.
So, all right. So as the leaves start to fall, you know, that I pay less attention to the temperature differences because I think the birds are paying less attention to the temperature differences. But in your initial comment, you made a critically important word choice, and you said edge habitat is really important to rough grouse throughout the year, isn't it?
It is, definitely.
So as leaves fall, I think about those alder sloughs where popples, aspen intersect with older growth forest or evergreen forest, like the intersection between those two kinds of habitat, just critical, isn't it?
I would say so. And, you know, definitely as we start getting into the cooler months leading into winter, that thermal cover is going to be really important too. So, you know, looking for those evergreen trees where they can get up as the snow starts to fall and it gets colder, that's heavily important too. So I know food is of the utmost importance to grouse, of course, but I think a lot of hunters would agree that cover is much more important. So
yeah,
looking to define those mixed age class areas and just that they've got all the necessary elements that they need to thrive and avoid aerial predation. So yeah, definitely keep an eye out. So
you bring up evergreens, and people often don't connect the dots with evergreens in rough grouse. And like you said, your point is like rough grouse are not living in a evergreen dominated forest, but particularly as the snow falls and the leaves fall off, evergreens do provide tremendous thermal cover and escape cover. For birds. It's like anybody that's hunted rough grouse, you know, that in the Northwoods, you know, they tend to find birds in a bit of mixed forest, like Christmas tree sized evergreens after the leaves fall.
That's right.
Because those birds use that for, like you mentioned, a little bit of thermal cover.
Thermal cover, yeah.
But then also, who hasn't been hunting rough grouse and been on one side of an evergreen tree? And that bird flushes the other side, you hear it and you never see it.
That is true. I think people have that experience quite a bit. So
I also find like when the snow lands, that often grouse really gravitate to the kind of the trunk, the base of those evergreens. For whatever reason, they like to keep their feet out of the snow and in the thermal cover underneath the evergreens too. That Christmas tree size evergreens mixed in with an aspen and birch forest is just...
It's prime. That's what we look for. That's right. The good stuff.
It is. When you think about visually trying to explain the good stuff, can you describe that for us? What's the... like the diameter of the trees that you guys are after at RGS?
Yeah, so typically we're looking for things that are about the size of your forearm, maybe not much bigger than a baseball bat size, but that that 10 to 20 year age class aspen is key. They also are dependent on mature forests, especially in the later part of the season when they're dependent on those high energy food sources that come from mature aspen. Those catkins and things like that.
Catkins so, and cat buds.
And buds, yeah. Yep. So it's of the utmost importance that there is mixed stand diversity in terms of species diversity and age class, and that's what we're all about at Rough Grouse Society. So that's what we do.
Cool. I'm going to ask you to point people to the Rough Grouse Society and where they can learn more and get involved. I also want to give a shout out to a mutual partner of ours, Onyx Hunt.
Onyx Hunt.
Onyx Hunt. If you're a bird hunter, a quail hunter, a grouse hunter, a pheasant hunter, chances are you're already using the Onyx Hunt app to find success each fall. But another reason to support Onyx is the work that Onyx is doing for conservation and hunter access. Through their grant program, Onyx has donated millions of dollars to open up more than 390,000 acres across 26 states. Their public lands report, like landlocked, corner locked, and private land public access, shine a spotlight on key access issues. At Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever, we're proud to partner with Onyx on our PATH program, Public Access to Habitat, which has already opened up more than 100,000 acres of high-quality habitat and private lands in South Dakota, Nebraska, and brand new in North Dakota. Onyx is helping make real boots-on-the-ground impact, and you can help as well. Use the code PFQF. You'll get 20% off your membership, and Onyx will make a contribution back to our organization. Again, that's a code PFQF at onyxhunt.com. Jeremy, thanks for joining me here. Tell our listeners about how to get involved with Rough Grouse and American Woodcock Society, our partners in conservation.
Yeah, definitely. So you can go on our website, roughgrousesociety.org, and there's all the different chapters listed on our Get Involved portion of the website. You can find your local chapter in your area, whether that be in Minnesota, Wisconsin, across the Great Lakes. We are up and down the eastern seaboard from New York all the way down to Georgia. We're very excited to be expanding specifically on the woodcock front down in the southern Appalachians. We just brought on our first woodcock-specific forest conservation specialist down there. So that's a big applause to the Woodcock Society.
Right on.
Our organization, very, very happy about that.
And you mentioned you service chapters out west as well.
We do.
Yeah. And how many chapters do you have in Washington? You said you have a new one in Colorado too.
We do. We've got one chapter in Washington based in the Seattle area. They do a lot of their work in the northeast corner of the state. In Colorado, they're a brand new budding chapter. We're looking at doing some things just outside of the Boulder, Denver area. So, yeah, very, very good stuff. We're very excited about the work that we're going to be trying to do with those guys, building it from the ground up.
If folks want to learn more and join, become a member, where do you want to point them?
roughgrousesociety.org. You can sign up to become a member there, but also we'd love to have you come out to any of our events across the state of Minnesota or other states across our regions. We do hunting heritage events, and yeah, come on out, support what we do, and we'd love to have you.
And if folks want to drop you an email, can they hit you up?
They can get me at jeremyc@roughgrousesociety.org.
Outstanding. I am a proud member of Rough Grouse Society. I'm a dual member, Rough Grouse Society and American Woodcock Society. I'm a huge fan of woodcock. Well, I grew up hunting both rough grouse and woodcock, and I think woodcock are one of the most underappreciated birds, game birds out there. I just love them.
I think so too. Very unique little fellas. I think Alicia, my bride, she loves them for their little woodcock dance.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Very good. So
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for joining me today.
Yeah. Thank you, Bob. We appreciate you having us.
But I do want to mention one more time to please check out the brand new film, Opening Day, Michigan. It's at pheasantsforever.org/openingday2025. It's a story of a rough grouse hunt that took place on the opener last year with my mom, my dad, my wife, my brother, and my pack of short hairs, including it was the last opening day for my beloved pup, Esky, before she passed away. So it's really important and sentimental to me, and hope you all enjoy it. Tetra Hearing, as I mentioned, is offering $100 off custom shield devices at tetrahearing.com. If you use the code PFOPENINGDAY100 at checkout for a limited time, and in addition to saving that $100, Tetra will also double their conservation gift in kind donation for each set of custom shield devices sold during this opening day celebration. So thank you to Tetra Hearing and Chief Upland. Another thank you there as well. Chief Upland is giving away a Pheasants Forever Edition over under vest to one lucky winner. To qualify, you got to like Chief Upland on their Facebook or Instagram channels, and then on this podcast's post, tag the person you're most looking forward to hunting with on opening day this season. Folks, we're here. Opening days are popping up everywhere. Sharptail seasons in North Dakota, South Dakota. They're already open in Montana, Nebraska, forest grouse in the West. And here we are recording on the precipice of Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin rough grouse openers, and before long, the pheasant hunting and quail hunting seasons will be here. So, Jeremy Collard, Rough Grouse Society, please join Rough Grouse Society, American Woodcock Society. They are incredibly valuable partners in conservation. And thanks, Jeremy, for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Bob. And good luck to all the hunters out there this season. I know we're all very excited, and we've been looking forward to this day for a long time. So hope you guys all get out and enjoy the season.
Here we go. And I'm Bob St. Pierre reminding you to always follow the dog. Something good will rise. Thanks for listening, folks.